Hey, my name is Brian. I'm an alcoholic. I belong to the Weymouth Old South Union Group, a little bit south of Boston. My sobriety date is February 4th, 1998. And as a result of doing the work laid out in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have had the guaranteed spiritual experience. And, meaning, I don't feel the way I felt the day I got into detox, you know. I don't feel the way I felt not too long ago, you know. My spirit continues to grow. You know, I continue to have new experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I continue to change. My relationship with my God continues to change. My relationship with my friends, with my family, with my sponsor, with guys that I sponsor, continues to change, you know. Because I continue to seek more power. I continue to seek new experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get a kick out of it when people say, you know, I'm bored in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm bored. You know, I don't know what else to do. How could you get bored in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, there's just, like, sometimes I feel like there's too much to do, you know. But it is truly a gift. You know, I love being sober today. When I came into, when I got introduced to the recovery process and I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought this was a sentence. I thought I was a 23-year-old kid sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous. How can I get out of this? How can I learn how to drink normal? And at that moment, I never knew that was not going to happen. You know, I didn't know that was not the way it was going to be. And you know what? Thank God, you know? Thank God I didn't find a way to drink, you know? I didn't find a way to drink normally. I never did drink normal. I'll talk a little bit about how I got here. You know, I guess I really don't have the typical young people's story. You know, I picked up a drink later on. I was 18, maybe almost 19 years old, and I took that drink, and it was like the instant personality change. The magic of alcohol happened, you know, impacting a moment in my life. You know, I remember where I was. I remember who I was with. I remember how much I drank. I remember what I drank, you know, and I remember it was like layers of skin being shed for me. It was like just tons of weight off my shoulder. And it was like I left Brian somewhere behind me. And I became this new man, you know. It was like having a spiritual awakening, you know. As the result of, you know, taking a few hits off a bottle. You know, I drank a little bit of fire water, cinnamon snaps. And I remember we were going to this nightclub, and I went to this club, and it was just, I mean, I walked in there like I owned the place. You know, it was like, talk about instant personality change. You know, I found something new. You know what I mean? It was like Columbus discovering America, and it was just like, you know, I found something new, and I couldn't wait to get back to it. You know, I needed to feel that good. You know, because for so long, like I didn't pick up a drink for a long time, you know. But there was always that fear inside, like, you know, my girlfriend's cheating on me. I know it. I'm a skateboarder, but I'll never be as good as my other friends. I suck. No one knows me. My artwork sucks. It's like, it was always that fear, always that feeling less than, you know, how can I become just as good as, you know what I mean? I just want to be just as good, you know? And it's like when I put alcohol in my system and I started to run with this and things started to take off and alcohol started to do what it does, you know, oh my God, it was like, look out, you know? Look out, world, here I come, you know? Great words from Bill Wilson's story, you know, I'd arrived at last. You know, and that's exactly how I felt. I felt like I finally made it. I'm finally a part of the gang, you know. I'm a part of the club, you know. And I'm just as good as, if not better than you, you know. And I started to run with this, and I started to enjoy it. Doctor's opinion says, men and women drink, because they like the effect produced by alcohol. See, I must have really, 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 really loved the effect produced by alcohol, because I took to it like a fish to water, and it's like alcohol, and then and the other things came into play right away. It's like I was just loving it. Summer of 1993, it was like the summer of love. It was like going to raves and going to clubs, and just, it was just crazy, And it was all like uncharted territory for me. It was like I was having the time of my life. Like I made it, And I didn't see what was to come, I didn't see what was to come. And it happened fairly quick. I remember I was in college, and all of a sudden it's like it wasn't that important to go to class anymore. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, I'll go back to college next semester. I'll take a semester off. I need a little bit of time off to relax and enjoy myself. The relationship with my family started to get strained. I wanted to become a professional skateboarder, and then all of a sudden it was like, well, I enjoy skateboarding on acid, so it'll be a little bit better. I could skateboard later in the night now, more hours, and it was like little by slow. It's like all the things that I really, really set out for and that I wanted just started to like get diluted, I remember I got a job, and the jobs that I wanted to get, I got jobs that I knew that I can, drink and do other things at. I remember having this warehouse job, and I'm on a forklift, and it's just like this place was crazy. I mean, it was the second shift, so everybody there raged, and it was like I had the acid, other people had the coke, and like during lunch break we'd all go out and get liquor, and it was just like it was insane. It's like I'm like flying around this corner on my forklift, just laughing my ass off, and my friend comes around the other corner on his pallet jack, just a bottle tipped back, and I was just like, this is awesome. Like I need to do this for the rest of my life. It's like I was ready to like have that as my career. I got power out of that. It worked at the time, Alcohol worked. Plain and simple, alcohol worked. I got a lot of power when I drank alcohol, I felt right. It got me to that place. Right up until about the point where it stopped getting me to that place. Progression. The craving kicked in where more demanded more, and all of a sudden it was like a few hits off of a bottle didn't work anymore, and then a few hits off the bottle and some other things didn't work anymore, and then that plus that plus that, the progression of the disease, textbook progression. And next thing you knew, it's like I had an apartment, I was living up in Lowell, Mass, and great place, you gotta come visit it. Special place in my heart for Lowell. And I remember all of a sudden it was the summer of 1996. I had an apartment up there with this girl, and we were both just crazy. We were both so crazy, just deep in our addiction and our alcoholism. And I'm just bumming around the streets of Lowell, just trying to get right. And then there was a point in that summer where it came like I couldn't get to that place anymore. And I realized it, and I was just like, and I got scared, and I was just like, oh, this isn't working anymore. This isn't working for me. Like, what am I going to do now? And I tried to take more and more and more, and I kept on seeking power from outside things. Traveling, I hit the road, I followed the Dead for a little while, and then it was like I was trying to follow another band, and then I got to get out of Lowell. I got evicted from an apartment. I remember I moved into this apartment, this little dive up in the Acre in Lowell, and like I put down money. It's like I had a little bit of money left from that warehouse job, and I've lost that job by now, and everything's getting spent and pawned off, And I put down, I had just enough money to put down for first and last. So we stayed in that apartment for first and last, and then it was like we got kicked out to the street, and so we ended up getting kicked out to the street, and it's just like, it's Lowell, we gotta get out of Lowell, and I ended up trying to, you know, so me and my girl, we hitchhiked to upstate New York, out to Binghamton, and not an easy hike, especially in the fall and early winter, and you know, so we hike out there, and it's like, and I'm thinking, now this is it. I'm out in the woods, it's beautiful out here, this is going to be it. This is going to be it. Yeah. Up until about 6 days later, where I'm just crawling out of my skin, the obsession's on my back, I need something quickly. And so I hop back on the 88 and, you know, shoot all the way back to Lowell, and I'm hanging around, bumming around Lowell, you know, leeching off mom and dad because they're in the next town over, so I'm leeching off of them, and all right, now I'm good, and I get back to Binghamton. And then a few days later, I hitchhike back to Lowell, and then back out to Binghamton, and then back to, I mean, it was just insanity, pure insanity, and it's like, and I keep on, like, seeking out this, I keep on trying to seek power, you know. I heard someone say it before, I've always been a seeker of power. But the much-needed power wasn't there, you know? I kept on seeking power, thinking that that stuff is going to work. One of these days it will work again. I'll get back to a place just like how it used to be when I first picked up, you know, that magic of that first drink. And, I, you know, it's like the magic of the first time. We always remember the first time, you know? It's like, and I kept on thinking I was going to get back to like how it was. I knew I was, you know, I started to realize that I was going through tough times. I knew my drinking wasn't normal. I mean, oh my God, you know, anyone could see that. And then I started to see it. And everything that I tried to do to control and to maintain always blew up in my face. You know, all my human resources failed. You know, all the powers that I tried to use to fix this, willpower, brain power, money, California, New York. I mean, it's like everything that I tried to do, job, it's like all my human powers failed. And it just, things just kept on getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And I remember I hit this brief period, a very, very short period, where I kind of got things together, where I had a job and I thought I was okay. I had a job. I was drinking like a maniac. I mean, I was like all the time drinking. And it's like I switched my friend, you know, change your brand and environment. You know, switched up the friends. I got a job. I'm barely holding it down. And I think I'm doing okay, you know. But the thing is, like, this obsession just never leaves me, you know. The baffling feature of alcoholism, it's that obsession that's always on my back. It's like my mind, the same mind that I'm using to try to concoct a plan to fix my life, me trying to fix my life, that mind that I'm using to try to fix my life is the same mind that keeps on pointing me back to disaster. You know, I can't do this on my own. I've never been able to. You know, and I finally I talked myself right back into another run, and I got another habit going. And the funny thing that happened is in the summer of 1997, I went to detox. I don't know why. You know, God's got a sense of humor. I ended up in detox, and I figured I'll go into this detox. I'll kick the other stuff, dope, bad, stay away, and I'll drink again. I'll drink and I'll smoke a little, and maybe a couple other things. And it's just like I'm gonna control. I'm gonna maintain. Things are gonna be okay. And I got into that. I mean, I went to detox to learn how to drink in safety. Go figure. You got to be sick to identify with that. And it's just I go into that detox. And what happened to me was I listened to people's stories. I listened to people talking about their habits, how long they've used, how much they drank, you know, crashing their cars into lakes, how much time in jail they did, how many pills they did. They've lost it. I'm listening to all these stories, and I just talked myself right out of this deal. I said, there's no way I can be an alcoholic. Listen to these. Look how bad these people are. You know, I'm not as bad as them. And I compared my way right back out. Yeah. And I left that detox. And again, with the plan. Again, with the plan, you know, brain power, you know, trying to overcome this on my own. And it lasted for about a week, and I got caught up in another run, and it's like I tried to hit the road again, traveling around, following this music festival, thinking that being on the road, hanging out with different friends is going to do it, and within a very short time, I was just as bad off, if not worse. You know, again, it says it in the book, you know, over any considerable period, it gets worse, never better. And I kept on waiting for it to get better. You know, thinking that all of a sudden it's just going to disappear. You know? Like it's just going to disappear and all of a sudden I'm going to regain control on my own. Like that power is just going to like I'm going to uncover it. Like, oh, there it is. You know, it's like, I found it. And 8 months later, you know, I remember leaving that detox with a plan. I was just like, I am not going to do that stuff again. And you could have hooked me up with a lie detector test that morning, and it would have said he's telling the truth. He's absolutely telling the truth. He's not gonna do that stuff. You know, he's gonna control and maintain. Everything's gonna be right. And 8 months later, I'm homeless again. I'm strung out again. My life is completely unmanageable on the outside and on the inside. You know, I hate myself. I hate everything around me. I mean, it hurts to breathe. And again, mom and dad are kicking me out and said, you know, no more. We've had enough with your problems. No more. We can't deal with you. You know, my mother and my father are not alcoholic. They're not addicts. But they're dying from my disease. You know? And they said, you know, no more. You know, we can't watch this anymore. And they kicked me out, you know. And the arrogance and the ignorance of my alcoholism, me, I'll speak for myself. You know, I just looked at them and I was like, how can you do this to your son? You know, like all dramatic and stuff. It's like, poor me. I'm the one using. I'm the one drinking. I'm the one about to be thrown out in the snow. It's just like, what alcoholism does, you know, in the grips. And that last day, I remember I put the ladder up to the back of the house. I crawled through the bathroom window, snuck into the house, and I'm using the phone. I'm like going crazy. I'm like calling all these people, like trying to get free stuff, you know, trying to get a hookup so I'm not so deathly sick. And I remember, like, all during the day, I was hanging out with, like, one of my last friends around trying to, like, fill out job applications. And I'm walking into places with, like, you know, cock items, like, can I fill out an application? And they're probably like, yeah, sure. And, like, hand it back, and they're probably like, shh, shh, you know, rip it up, throw it away. You know, and the other thing is, though, I was trying to call detoxes. Yeah. And, you know, if I think I have anything to do with getting into detox that day. I mean, if it was up to me, I would have got a job. I would have talked my mom and dad into letting me stay home so I can work. And look, I got a job. I'm going to be responsible. I'm going to do the right thing now, make another broken promise to him. You know? And the job thing didn't work out. You know? And I ended up getting accepted to Framingham Detox that night. And I remember my friend drove me to detox that night. And I didn't know, you know, that whole ride there, you know, he was just getting me as lit up as possible. And I remember he was the kid that used to like to talk a lot when he was, you know, smoking. And so, you know, I'm just coming out of my skin. I'm like, oh, just pass that thing now. And it's just like, I'm like watching it just burn away in his hand. I'm just like, you suck. And it's just like, I needed to get out of self so bad. I just wanted to get out. I just wanted to just leave, you know. I hit that place where I couldn't picture my life with or without alcohol. You know? And I remember we pulled up to Framingham Detox, and I didn't know that was going to be my I didn't know that was going to be my last day. I didn't know God was going to separate me that day. Yeah. And I went into that detox, and I sat in that detox, and I shook, and I was coming out of my skin. I mean, the walls were breathing, and I'm counting cinder blocks on the wall just to slow my head down. Watch the sun go down. It's bedtime. Lay in the plastic mat. Watch the sun come back up because I couldn't sleep at all. I mean, just horrible. Just horrible. And I just listened to my body kick. You know? And I remember like the medication was like Davon or Davos. It's like having like a Motrin 600. You know, it's just like, here you go. Go to your room. And it's just like, me and my head in my room, just wide awake, just dying, you know. And I got to listen to my body, and I got to feel what alcoholism and addiction was doing to me. And it wasn't pretty. It wasn't nice. You know? And I remember sitting in that detox, and I'm trying to figure out another plan. Because, like I said, I couldn't picture my life without alcohol. I mean, you're talking about nothing. You're talking about total abstinence. Like, I can't even take Ephedrine or Robitussin or nothing. You know, it's like, how can you expect that from me? It's like, come on. Like, not even over-the-counter stuff? Legal? But then to think of things getting worse. I remember this woman came into detox. She put on a commitment. And by the way, if there's any of you here tonight that are putting on commitments at detoxes and rehabs, like, thank you. Please keep doing that. You know? I go to detox commitments all the time because I love doing it. I don't care if everybody is knotted out in that place. I don't care. I need to be there, and I want to be there. You know? Because I probably didn't look too good that night when this woman came in. And chances are, maybe she didn't want to be there either. But she showed up, and she carried a message. I don't remember everything she said. I don't remember her name. I don't remember what she looked like. But I remember she said one thing. And she said, if you choose to pick up a drink when you leave this detox, the best it's going to get, if you're lucky, is ending up in another detox. And when she said that, it like split me in half. And it cracked right through that ego, and it cracked right through that false pride, and it's almost like it shattered that sense of delusion, you know, where I thought like I can leave this detox and figure it out how to do it right this time. And when she said that, all I could think of was, what if she's right? What if she's right? Like, what if I leave here? What if I leave here and take another drink and it gets that much worse? And then all of a sudden I started to think about the times where I'm like down in my room by myself doing my thing, and what if my mom and dad came home and I was laid out on the floor in a nice shade of blue? You know? And I started to think about that stuff. I started to think about like my little sister. I started to think about how like my little sister couldn't even look at me in the eyes anymore. How she came home from college one day and she saw my stuff laid out on the counter. And I tried to laugh it off like a joke, like, oh, my friend must have left that here. You know, and like, what if she was right? Like, what if that was the best it's going to get? Is ending up in a detox wearing someone else's pajamas. And it got me thinking. It got me wondering, you know, what else is there? Like, what do you people got to offer then? Because if you're going to take away the stuff that I think, that I'm convinced is working for me, then what else have you got to offer? You know? And they said, welcome. We have something for you. You know? You've been seeking power this whole time. Willpower, brain power. You've been seeking out that power to try to fix this problem. Obviously, you need a power greater than yourself that's going to work. You need something bigger than you that's going to work, because you can't figure this out on your own. But there is something that's worked for us. We have a higher power. We have a God, you know, whatever your own conception is, something greater than you that will work. And right away, you know, like it says, prejudice exists. And right away, I went right to the, oh, I went, I, can't get back into that. I remember the religious classes, first to eighth grade over at St. Rose School. Like, I just can't go back to this. I can't go back. I just don't want to do it. I thought about going to church, and then it's like, oh, I knew this was like some sort of religious deal. Like, I just don't want to do this, you know. I thought I neatly evaded that. I tucked it all away, you know. You know, and they said, you know, whatever your God is, a God of your own conception. So it's like, being cocky, I'm just like, all right, then fine. My God is a cross between Bob Marley and Jerry Garcia. Take that. You know, it's like, I felt like I like had like one up on him. It's just like, and they said, okay, whatever your own conception is, just get down your knees and start asking for help. You know, whatever's going to work for you, provided it makes sense to you, you know. But the thing is, it's like, I started to ask for help. You know, I started to ask for help. I started doing it in detox. I remember like one of the first times I hit my knees in detox beside that crummy little bed. And I hit my knees and I started to ask for help. And I was just like, help. I don't know what I'm asking for. I don't know who I'm asking. I don't even know if you even really hear me. I felt like I was lying, you know what I mean? It's like, but I just started to do it. It was suggested, and I started to do it. Yeah. And I believe right there, God laid out a path for me. He heard my cry for help. No matter how real or unreal it was, I believe my higher power heard it, and He said, "Here you go, kid." And He laid out a path, and I started to walk down this path. And it included some further treatment from detox. It included a halfway house. I went to a halfway house. And in that halfway house, I mean, all sorts of crazy things happened in halfway houses. I mean, people, you know, I lost about 9 or 10 roommates. People come in, and a day later, they're back out. It's like, I get close to people, and they're gone 3 or 4 weeks later. It's like, I got to see this disease starting to really work on people. Someone coming in from jail, a week later, they're back in, you know. And I really started to see what was going on. I was just like, wow, like things aren't getting any better. But I wasn't picking up. And physically, I started to feel a little better. You know? I started to come around to a few meetings. I mean, so loaded with fear. Because it's like, I would do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And all of a sudden, it was like the great eraser. You know what I mean? It would erase reality from me and all that stuff. It was like that security blanket. And now you've taken my security blanket and I'm like a raw nerve. And I remember going into meetings. There were some pretty big meetings in South Boston at the time. And I remember I used to like to go to this Friday night meeting. And it was big. And I would get there a little early. And I would grab a cup of coffee. And then boom, the room would fill up. And I would just, I'd like gun down my cup of coffee. And it was just like, and they got like those little like shot glasses, the little Dixie cups. And it's like, now it's time to like get up and get another cup of coffee. Well, how am I going to do that? You know, it's like, I was terrified. I was so scared. But like I said, little by slow, my life started to change. Things started to change. Things started to get better. Like I said, physically, I started to feel better. And then all of a sudden, it was like, Mom and Dad started to talk to me again. All of a sudden, my sister started to talk to me again. I started to feel okay. I got a little job in this mailroom at this business, and I started to enjoy showing up for that job. I started to feel all right. I remember I grabbed a hold of this sponsor, and I just started to feel like I was starting to do some right things. I went through a step meeting, and I started to like half-ass my way through some steps, taking a couple here and there. Figured I'll avoid the fourth step writing because I don't know how long I'm going to stick around here for. Fifth step, yeah, you know, what's a fifth step? Oh, you just tell your whole story to a priest. Okay, I can do that. You know, it's like, you know, a combination between lazy and misinformed, you know what I mean? But somehow I got through, you know what I mean? I got carried, you know. My God saw that I was trying to make some change. My God saw that I was trying to do something different. My God saw that I was trying to reach out and ask for help. No matter how half-assed it was, He saw that I was trying to do something. And I believe He provided for me. You know? And things happened. things happened. I started to take some action. I looked at those steps and I said, I could try that. I'll do that. That, no way. That, I'll think about. That, all right, I can do that one. That one, are you kidding me? You know, it's like, meditate? What the hell? You need acid to meditate. What are you talking about? You know, it's like, but my God saw me trying to do something. My God saw me trying to do something. And he led the way. Next thing you know, I ran into this man. And this man took an interest in me. And I felt comfortable around this dude. And we started to talk. And I remember he'd start to talk to me. He'd give me his business card. He'd be like, give me a call. And I'd just be like, take his business card, you know, file it into like my little like top drawer. And the next week I'd see him. He'd be like, what are your fingers broken? I'd be like, whoa. And he'd be like, call me, you know. Let's just chat. Let's kick it. And I'd be like, all right, you know, here's my business card. It's like, I had like a stack of his business cards. And it's like, finally I called him. We started to talk. We started to shoot the breeze. And this man became my sponsor. And he showed me how to get active. He showed me how to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He showed me how to be a member of a group. He got me involved in 12 and 12 meetings. Up in Boston, there's a big thing called the AWOL program, which isn't really AA. It's not AA affiliated. It was a program brought down from Canada to a halfway house, and it's a nice introduction. It's not too thorough, but it's a nice introduction to the 12 steps. And he got me involved in that. And again, like I said, I started to take some action. And my life started to change. And like I said, I remember looking at those steps, and I was just like, man, you people tell me that all of a sudden I'm going to have a great life, and I'm going to be okay without booze and drugs by going through those steps, and I'm going to have a conscious contact with a God, and my spirit's going to be awake by doing those things on that curtain shade? And I was like, no way. There's no way those things are going to work for me. No way. But you know what? It's like, how do you know the steps are going to... You don't know the steps are going to work until you go through the steps and they work. You know? Like, I took some action in those steps and all of a sudden I started to feel like a different person. My life started to change. You know, next thing you know is like I said, I just started to live life. But what happened was... My experience is, I like to share my experience. My experience is, I think I hit this point in recovery where I was just kind of flatlining. I wasn't really having any new experiences. I was doing a 12 and 12, and then it was like an AWOL program, then the AWOL would end, and it would go back to the 12 and 12, and I was sponsoring a couple of guys to the best of my ability. It's like, I thought sponsorship was like, you know, you pick them up, you bring them to a meeting. Yeah, you want to get involved in the steps? Go join an AWOL. You know, it's like, I didn't know what I didn't know. You know? The big book, I've read a couple of pages in the big book here and there, but like I was comfortable in my 12 and 12. You know? I was comfortable reading my 12 and 12, doing a fourth step every once in a while. You know, amends, yeah, I said sorry to mom and dad, you know, and my sister, and it's good, I'm good. And like I said, I was just getting comfortable, you know, kind of just breezing through. The grace of God was just kind of just carrying me along, and nothing new was happening, God has a funny way of shaking things up. You know, it was like all of a sudden, life experiences woke me up, almost like without my permission. You know what I mean? It's like, and Mark Houston says it, you know, it's like, it's not comfortable waking up. I liken that to, when I'm a little kid, and I'm in my bed and I'm warm, and then all of a sudden my mother comes in and she puts the light on. She's like, time to get up, go to school. You know, and it's just like, it's cold, and I know I have to go up to the bus stop and it's freezing out, and it's like, but you gotta wake up and it's uncomfortable. and I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to move, you know. And it's like, and I was comfortable in my sobriety, and I was just like, I don't want to do anything more. I'm getting along. I'm getting by with what I'm doing, with what I got. And then all of a sudden, it was like, bam, life happens, and you know, all within like a month and a half, it was like my grandmother passed away from cancer. My mother was just rocked. You know, a week later, my fiance up and left me, and then like a month and a half later, a good friend of mine overdosed and passed away, and I was just like, ouch, you know, ouch. What a way to wake up, you know. It's like, you know, I was shook. I was pretty shook up, and you know what it was? It was like I was trying to run the show. I'm thinking I'm running the show. You know, look at me. I'm doing my AWOLs. Look at me. I'm doing my 12 steps. I'm sponsoring all. You know, me. I used to have a joke like, "Oh, I sponsor half the city of Dorchester." It's just like, you know, look at me. Look at me. Look at what I'm doing. You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get humbled pretty quick. And like I said, I was shook up, you know. And I needed to do something. I needed to do something quick because I was in a hole, and I wanted to get out of that tough place. And I needed to do something. And I knew, like when things get bad, like you, your girlfriend leaves you, or blah blah blah. You know, you go to a meeting, you talk to your sponsor a little more. You know, it's like it was like a whole bunch of stuff happened. I knew I needed to take some action. And at that time, I was listening to some CDs. I was listening to it's funny, I heard Chris mention this before. I was listening to some Joe and Charlie CDs, and these cats were they were talking about the Big Book in a way that I've never heard, and I got interested in what they were saying. I said, you know what? Let me try this. And my friend, he got sober through the Big Book, and he kind of worked on me a little bit, and it opened me up, and it opened me up to having a new experience, you know. And I was able to crack that pride, like, I'm 7.5 years sober, I'm doing the right thing. And it's like all of a sudden I was able to get humbled to try something new, you know, to try something different. And I ended up getting involved in Big Book work, and I had a new experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, and again my life started to change. I started to wake up. I started to become more informed. And man, I'll tell you, it's like when they sit there and say, you know, it's like in the 10th step when it sits there and says, you know, when fear kicks up. It's like, turn that over, you know, talk to someone, make amends quickly if harmed, and then get out and help somebody. It's like when something's kicking up inside throughout my day, and all of a sudden it's like, I don't feel right, or you know, I'm getting resentful, I'm a little fearful. It's usually the two things. You know, I talk about it with somebody, and then I get out of myself, and I'll be friendly to someone on a job site, start, you know, maybe help the carpenter carry the wood over to another room or something, or I'll call someone that I'm sponsoring. You know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden I'm not thinking about myself. Like they weren't lying when they wrote that stuff. And I started, like I said, I got introduced to the Big Book, and I started to do this work laid out in the Big Book, following the CDs, and then I got attracted to more CDs. I started to listen, and I started to listen what these people were talking about. And I remember I'd be sitting there, like, listening to the CD, and I'd flip open my book, I'd be like, oh yeah, there it is. And I'd listen to what they were saying, and I'd follow it. I started to wake up. I started to wake up, you know, free at last, you know. And sobriety took on a whole new meaning, you know. I started to learn what it meant to be recovered. You know? I started to see how, like, contrary a lot of the slogans are and a lot of, like, other stuff. And I don't want to step on toes or anything like that, so I'm not going to go there. Sometimes I go there and I get in trouble. You know? you know what? Keeping it in the first person, I get to see where I was very contemporary. And I got to see where I was shortchanging myself. And not only that, but shortchanging the people that I was trying to help. And I got to take on new direction. And my God just never quit on me. And He just steered me down another path. And I became so much more alive. And I woke up so much more. And I took on a new set of directions. And it was just like, it was like getting plugged in again. You know, it was like getting so fired up and reaching. I remember I'd step up to podiums now and I'd just be like, I would go into these like meetings that I used to go into before where I was just like, you know, keep fighting the fight, you know, giving a good talk. And it was just like, and now all of a sudden I walk in and I walk up to a podium with a big book and people would be like, what is he doing? Who does he think he is bringing that book into the suite? You know, it's like, and I would get up to that podium and I would start to share, be like, who does he think he is? You know, it's like, and I'd ruffle a lot of feathers, and I started to use the big book as a weapon. I'd be like, if you go to page so-and-so, and it's just like, I got pretty fired up, you know, I got pretty fired up, and things got a little rocky for a little while, and then, you know, God right-sized me again. You know? I got sick and tired of just being so egotistical. You know what I mean? Or having to try to straighten people's message out. And it's just like, I thought it was all about like, you know, we gotta change the message in South Boston and Dorchester and Quincy. And it's like, we gotta change the message. Like, they got it wrong. And it's like, no, no, no. I don't need to change anyone's message. If that's their experience, and that's what's working for them, and they're sober, and they're happy, cool. I can change my message. You know? What works for me? Am I sober? Am I happy? You know? I can inform. I can help others. Cool. Cool. It's none of my business. You know what I mean? It's like, I can just take a step back. You know? And I can be of service. You know? I don't need to go out on a crusade or anything like that. You know? We've ceased fighting anyone or anything. The 10-step promise. But I'll tell you, getting current. I just had a recent experience with the 12 steps. Just because I got a little bit of sobriety time, and just because I've gone through the 12 steps before, doesn't mean all of a sudden I get to this place where like everything's good now. It's like the 11 steps talks about improving our conscious contact. How do I improve that conscious contact? Through more work with others, through more connection with God, through digging deeper and deeper and getting right size, through more service work, you know? And how, you know, I keep taking this work. I stay involved in this work, you know? I just went through the steps with someone. We went through the book together, and it was awesome. It's like, keeping it, you know, talking about keeping it fresh. It's like going through it for the first time all over again. You know, we started off the meeting with the set-aside prayer. So it's like, I get to set aside stuff each day and do something for the first time again. You know, it's like experiencing that one thing for the first time that day. You know, and that's how I tried to go about this last experience with the steps. It's like, I wanted to just set aside everything I know and everything I think I know, so I can make room for something new, you know? God, remove from me all the ego. God, remove from me like all like my experiences that I rest on, you know? To make room for new stuff, you know? And I just went through the steps again, and it was beautiful, you know? this man, he broke it down for me crystal clear. You know, he showed me like, Brian, you know, obviously you've admitted you have a problem, right? Yeah, obviously, you know, I can't drink, I can't use in safety. You know, every time I've tried to do it, I failed utterly. All my human resources have failed utterly. All right, kid, well, if you can admit that you're powerless, guess what the solution is? Seek power. All right, I'm down with that, you know, and I needed to seek power. Now, in the third step, I get introduced to that power. You know, it was like five words that really, really changed my sobriety over the past year is on the top of page 63, where I believe it's on the top of page 63, where it says, we had a new employer. You know? I have a new employer. Meaning, I'm not self-employed. I'm not trying to run the show on my own anymore. I'm going to take on new direction. You know? In the third step prayer, I go and meet my new boss. You know? My sponsor walks me down to the place, says, your boss is right there in the office. Go meet him. I went home that night, did my third step prayer. I met my maker. You know? I met my new creator, my new boss. My boss tells me, I have a job for you. I need you to do this job. I have everything you need to do this job. I just need you to show up and do this job. Can you do that? Yes, God, I can do that. Yeah. He's like, good. Well, in order for you to perform this job, we need to clear away some stuff that's going to be blocking you from doing this job properly. You know, and page 62 says it perfectly. It forms itself that's blocking me from doing this job. You know, my self-pity, my resentments, my fears, my self-centered fears, you know, my lack of faith. You know, it's like all that stuff needs to be cleared away so I can perform this work. You know, and I have a four-step inventory that's designed to perfectly remove that stuff, you know, cut that stuff out. In the fifth step, I took it to him and I said, here's the deal. You know, I got right with myself, I got right with God, and I got right with another person. In six and seven, I go back to my God and I say, you know, I looked over all my things in my quiet hour, looked at my first five proposals in my quiet hour, and I left anything out. You know, I'm trying to build on a foundation. Am I leaving anything out so it's going to be a weak foundation? You know, I don't want to have a weak foundation. You know, I still want to be thorough. Just because I'm a little bit sober, it doesn't mean I can skimp here and there. You know, I still want to be thorough. I saw it. I didn't leave anything out. And I went to my guy. I said, you know, this is the stuff that's blocking me. This is the stuff that's not allowing me to move forward. This is the stuff that's been standing in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. You know, please remove this stuff. You know, the sixth step, it's a question. You know what I mean? It's an entire step dedicated to taking the next step. You know, it's are you entirely ready? Now, in all essence, like, of course I'm entirely ready, but am I entirely ready? You know, because there's some things that just don't really hurt that much at that moment. You know, I used to be a graffiti artist. The problem is, I still enjoy doing graffiti. I'm not as bad as I used to be. You know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, the problems get removed. You know, but I am ready to have God remove these things which stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. You know, I need that stuff removed so I can perform this job. Seventh step, I did my prayer. I said, God, take away the stuff, especially the stuff that stands in the way of being useful. You know? Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. I say that in my morning prayer every day. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your work. Now, in order for me, I used to sit there and say, I'm working six and seven. I'm working six and seven. It's like, what am I, working my defects? It's like, what I found out that for me, in order for me to work six and seven, in order for me to have these defects removed, I need to do eight and nine. I need to make that list and I need to go out and make those amends. Because when I'm going out and I'm trying to make amends and I'm trying to right the wrongs, guess what? That means I'm trying not to do more wrong. I'm trying to correct those wrongs. I'm trying not to act out on those defects anymore because I don't want to cause more harm. You know? I don't want to continue to act out on that stuff that I've tried to turn over in six and seven. Try is the key word. So I stay willing. I made that eight-step list. Eight-step list was something that I've always, 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 always balked on in my step work. I don't know why. Maybe I just didn't want to see. See, I was always so afraid to make that 8-step list, because as soon as that name hit that list, that means I needed to go out and make that amends. You know? So I would scare myself off of doing an 8-step list, because I would go right to the 9-step amend. I would go right to that moment. I would go right to exactly how bad it's going to be, where I need to step up and make an amend to that person, and all my money that I got to give back to you. And it's just like, first of all, the 8-step is the 8-step, not the 9-step. Second of all, it's not my money, it's their money. You know? And finally, I made that 8-step list, and I got to look at that stuff. And basically, it's like, here's a person that was in my life. Was there a harm, or was there no harm? Yes, there was a harm. Guess what? They go on the list. That's all. You know. Now the point is, am I still willing or not? It was agreed that I would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol in the beginning, right? Right. All right then. So pray for that willingness. You know? And I got to take that 8-step list. And for a long time, I carried that 8-step list around. Obviously, I'm resting on my laurels again because I'm not carrying the 8-step list around anymore. But, meaning that there are still amends to be made. But I carried that list around for a while, and I became willing to make some of those amends. Even the financial amends. I don't like to part way with my money, you know. But like I said, it's not my money, it's their money. You know? And I continue to try to do my best. And now moves me into the world of the Spirit. You know, and I come up to the 10th step. And I start to do that spot check inventory throughout the day. Because I'm trying, you know, I'm trying to remember. It's like, I don't want to create any more harms. You know? It tells me we vigorously commence this way of living. Meaning I still need to take inventory. I still need to do a spot check inventory. I still need to stay on this path. I need to continue to do this work to the best of my willingness. And I do that spot check throughout the day. And it says, we watch for fear, dishonesty, resentment. You know, we watch out for those four things. And it says, when these crop up, you know, when these, they're going to crop up. You know, stay on God, because when they crop up, all of a sudden I have directions on how to remove that stuff. You know, talk to someone about it, ask God to remove it. Was there any harms done? Make amends quickly. And then turn out, get off your ass and go help someone else so you can forget about your crap. Go be of service. It always works. It always works. It's a 12-step promise. It's the insurance plan. You know, and we talk about improving our conscious contact, you know, getting from a position of hopelessness and powerlessness to a position of having power, meaning I need to continue to seek power, to grow in the sunlight of the Spirit, to grow in the world of the Spirit. And I need to seek power. And how do I seek power? I seek that connection through prayer and through meditation. It took me, you know, I'm just being honest, it took me a long time to get into meditation. I used to joke with my friend, I'd be like, I work 11 and a half steps. See, I didn't know how to meditate, so I just didn't do it. I didn't go ask anybody. I figured, like, one of these days I'll figure out how to do it myself. You know, it's like, maybe I got scared, I didn't want to ask somebody, but I finally started to try. I remember I sat down and I listened to this ambient song. I have this meditation CD, and I put on this song, and it was like 6 or 7 minutes, and I sat there, quiet, still, silent, in my room by myself, and I listened to that thing in the dark for like 6 or 7 minutes, and I remember the song ended, and I was just like, it was like victory. I was like, it was like I just scored a touchdown. I was like, yes, I just meditated for 6 or 7 minutes. It was like, it was growth, you know? Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness, you know? It was growth. And I saw that upon that, I can grow more, you know? Continue to improve, you know? And since then, I love meditation now. I'm not going to lie and say, you know, I do it every morning and every night, because I don't. You know, I don't. I still slack on that. You know, But I've grown leaps and bounds, you know, and I enjoy doing that stuff. Last week, me and my girlfriend, we just went and we just took an introduction to like a Zen Buddhist meditation, you know. I want to seek power. I need to seek power, you know. Like our friend says, I get to seek power, you know. And once I've entered the world of the Spirit, I continue to seek power. I continue to take personal inventory. I continue to set right any new mistakes as I go along this path. I get rocketed into the 12th step, where all of a sudden I'm at that job now. I can perform this work. See, I've recovered and been given the power to help others. I no longer obsess over a drink or a drug anymore. And because I no longer obsess over it and I don't take it anymore, I don't crave it anymore. So now, I get to go out into the firing lines, I go to detoxes and rehabs and I do commitments, and I get to see these little cats shaking in detoxes, and I go up to them and I get to let them know, like, I know exactly how you're feeling. Today I don't feel that way. Are you interested? What's up with you? You know, what's going on? You know, I love how Sandy Beach says it. You know, so, how's it going? You know, it's like, I get to be of service. I get to have purpose. You know, what a gift. What an absolute gift. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started to come to your meetings because I just didn't want to drink anymore. I wanted to feel different, you know, and I've been given this, you know, I've been given this life. I had nothing to do with this. Like my friend Dave says, I suit up and show up. I suit up and show up. And because I wake up in the morning, I ask for a little bit of direction. I sit quiet with God for a few minutes. You know, I take some of the instructions laid out in the 11th step. I read those things. I believe those things work. And I go about my day. And I suit up and I show up. And I see where I could be of service to others. I try. Like it says in the 12th step, we try to carry this message, you know. I'm in the message carrying business. I'm not in the results business, you know. Paul Revere, he was a great message carrier. He blasted through that town. He yelled the redcoats are coming and moved on because there was more people that he needed to carry this message to. It wasn't up to him if those people followed the instructions or not and got out of Dodge, you know. And I realized that that's what my purpose is in this life, you know. To take on new direction, to continue to seek power, and to try to carry this message to let other people know that there is a way out of no way out. You know, I didn't think this program was going to work for me. I didn't think a God was going to work for me. But I've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which is indescribably wonderful. You know, and dreams have come true in my life. Like I said, my mom and dad in my life, my little sister, I have a brother-in-law. I have a little baby nephew. I'm a godfather. You know what I mean? It's like I got back into skateboarding, and it's awesome. You know, dreams come true in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you too can live a wonderful life. You know, I love being of service, and I want to thank your group, thank Chris for asking me to come down and allowing me to be of service and to take part in my recovery tonight. Thank you very much.